is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Chris Meadows, player development coach and author of the book, I Am D1, and you are listening to Hoopheads Podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. Great to be back live on the Hoopheads Pod. Good to be back.
Yeah, I'm just glad that we're here and you're able to respond to a text message if I need anything in an emergency situation.
Being away at a national park is a beautiful thing. You are disconnected whether you want to be or not. So yeah. Good vacation, good to be back, and glad to be back in the saddle here on the pod for sure.
Yep. So,
what did I miss?
I heard the Cavs got Ricky Rubio.
I was surprised by that, by the way. I had no idea that had happened. It was already past the news cycle by the time I got back into the real digital world, and that signing passed me up. It took me a day or two of being reconnected before I even realized that we had signed Ricky Rubio or whatever it was.
I'm pretty sure I sent it to you on Twitter, Mike.
Yeah, I may not have been able to. I don't know. I just didn't, for whatever reason, it never really crossed my path, but it's not a bad signing.
No. Oh, yeah. Well, I sent you a whole lot of stuff, so I guess I can't. I have to pick and choose,
man, and be judicious at what I look at.
Yeah. All right. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. So anyways, so I think while you were gone, we had Justin on and we talked about USA basketball, and obviously we hopped on after the first game, they losing to France. And I was a little more, thinking this was a precarious situation. Obviously, you know, talent trumps all in a sense, but you know, I just want your thought on Team USA winning the gold and what you does it mean anything, I guess, is the question.
I knew we were okay as soon as we had JaVale McGee on the team. I knew it was going to be all right. That was really
– Cavaliers really legend. That's what me, Justin, and I called him the whole time. Cavaliers legend.
That was the key for me, was picking up JaVale. I knew when that went down that everything was going to be all right. I mean, I just – the Olympics at this point, just in general, not even the Olympics as it relates to basketball, but I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. The Olympics in general, does anyone care anymore about anything? Like, did you watch any of the actual Olympics? I mean, I know you watched the basketball, but did you watch any track and field or swimming or gymnastics?
Well, I did watch track and field. I watched track and field because Katie Najat, man,
the Olmsted pole
vaulter. Olmsted Falls. They're having a huge celebration for her. So there was
okay.
I watched some of that. Here's the problem, Mike, and this is what I'm going to say at the Olympic problem is NBC. why are you tape delaying this crap? Like, and also,
yeah, you could do that. You could do that in 1984. You can't do that in 2021. Yeah.
And
doesn't.
The other problem, Mike, is like, and I complain, so I don't want to get on my soapbox here, but I had to pay $4.99 because I didn't have any illegal streams or something to watch the Team USA play. I had to pay $4.99 Peacock just to watch it because they hid the one thing that a lot of people probably wanted to watch behind the Peacock paywall, which is a bunch of garbage. Like, I don't understand.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think that when you look at the Olympic experience, and I think back to when I was a kid and what the Olympics meant and how much I watched of it, it seemed like it was much more of a national pride type of event where you watch things, you always were rooting for the American, and it just seemed like these secondary sports produce so many more stars, or at least people that everyone was aware of. I think of like Carl Lewis in the long jump and the 100 meters and just how big of a star Carl Lewis was. It's hard to imagine that any U.S. track and field athlete could approach anywhere near what Carl Lewis was to back in the 84 Olympics in L.A. I mean, he was just a huge star. And I don't know. I didn't watch any of it. I mean, obviously I was out of commission for most of it and wasn't able to see it, but it wasn't like I was missing any part of it. And I think that extends even to the basketball side of it. I think progressively it peaked probably with the 92 Dream Team, where you just wanted to see all those guys playing together. And I would say since then, my interest level in it has probably gone down. I mean, I don't know. Like even the years when you had the LeBron, Kobe, Carmelo, when you had that group, it still felt like, I don't know. It wasn't that interesting. I did watch this gold medal game, and I guess it was mildly entertaining, but I don't know. I didn't find myself watching it in the same way that I'm watching a regular season NBA game or a playoff NBA game for sure.
I must confess, I think what I watched the games, okay? I watched every single USA game, and I actually stayed up late for two of them. I will say this. I watched the most. Can you guess what event I watched the most of?
Golf.
100%. I watched a lot of golf. A lot of golf. And that's what I watched. I don't know. I like
Olympic golf. Olympic golf just seems like, I don't know. I just don't think that, I can honestly say I don't think I could get too interested in Olympic golf. No offense to you.
Well, you don't like golf though, so.
I do like golf. I enjoy watching the majors in when some big names are involved on the leaderboard on the last day. I don't mind watching golf.
There were some huge names on the leaderboard of the Olympics.
Yeah, but it's a meaningless golf. It doesn't really mean much.
Okay. I mean, I think winning a gold medal means a lot.
Same thing with
Xander Schauffele.
I'm sure that gold medal looks good around his neck, and I'm sure it's going to look good in his trophy case, but I don't know that. I don't know that I care about it. Same way that I think about tennis, where I don't know. I'm sure Serena Williams has won some gold medals in tennis, but.
Yes, she has, Mike. She has.
But I don't care. You know, it's not interesting to me versus her winning Wimbledon or winning the U.S. Open or just, I think about watching one of those big tennis events, and then I think about watching tennis in the Olympics, and I have very little interest in watching Olympic tennis, but I certainly would watch a Wimbledon final between Federer and Nadal, for example.
Look at you. I will say I could never watch tennis. Tennis is the most, like, and it's coming from a guy who watches golf. I can't watch tennis.
If you're watching a lot of golf, I don't think you can rightfully say that tennis is boring. Although, I guess somebody could make the case that both of them are boring. The bottom line is that all these sports have become, I think, somewhat marginalized. And because the TV audience is so fractured, it's not like, as I said, when I was a kid, the 84 Olympics, I'm 14 years old, and basically the entire country is glued to their TV. Everybody's watching it. People are talking about it. And now half the population, at least probably more, I'm giving it more credit than it probably deserves, doesn't even know the Olympics is going on, let alone isn't watching it. Or you think about the 1980 U.S. hockey team and do you believe in miracles? I know exactly where I was when that game finished, although I believe it was originally on tape delay. So I don't know if I was really aware of where I was when it finished. But when the telecast finished, I remember watching it and just the number of people that were talking about that and kids at school. And I didn't know anything about hockey. I didn't care about hockey. But in that moment, it was such a patriotic thing to watch the Olympics. And I think that's gone largely. And there just isn't the Olympics is not generating the type of star power that it did through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's just not the same. I guess Michael Phelps is probably the only Olympian in the last.
Well, come on. Wait. What's her name?
U.S. Olympian.
Yeah, what's her name? Who am I thinking of?
Well, she can't be that famous if you don't remember her name.
The gymnast, Simone Biles. Come on.
Yeah,
now,
she's been pretty. Yeah, she's been pretty. Come famous, on. I guess. All right, I'll give you Biles.
Listen, and I would say a bunch of the soccer players have.
Yeah, you know, but they're. I guess because the U.S. women's national team is sort of the marquee event for women's soccer. Nobody's watching women's professional soccer, at least not in this country. So I guess that any star who breaks out as a U.S. women's national team is going to be somebody that you'd recognize. But who's the last recognizable U.S. track and field athlete?
Katie Najat. I know. Probably, wait, Kersey?
I mean, that's a long time ago.
I mean, I can't think of any. I mean, I'll be honest, Mike.
Even from an international standpoint, Usain Bolt was a big star.
I've never I've never been into the Olympics personally. Never. Now, well, I will say this much.
What's the first Olympics you remember?
Atlanta 96.
Okay, so Michael Johnson.
I remember the bombing. That's what I remember the most.
Yeah, Michael Johnson was the big star, I think, of that Olympics, winning the 200 and the 400. But yeah, I think the Olympics peaked before you even started to remember it, I guess is my point. So
yeah, I will say this though. My wife watched the Olympics a lot. Like, she watched a lot. Cause I would come downstairs and watch whatever I was watching, or, you know, get ready to record with Justin, or just doing miscellaneous school stuff. Yes, I'm doing school stuff already. And
that's impressive.
Listen, I can't just roll the balls out, Mike. I gotta actually teach some math. Okay.
Hey, us phys ed teachers take that personally.
Oh, I know you do. Anyways, she was watching it every night, pretty much. She would watch at least, like, if there was something on that she wanted to. I know I would say, "What are you watching?" And she'd be like, "Gymnastics or swimming." And I'm like, "Oh, that sounds exciting." And then I would walk downstairs and get to work. So
that's the way it used to be, though, honestly. Like, I remember watching the Olympics where you just put it on at 8 o'clock and you'd watch it from 8 to 11:30.
Well, I think the thing that's really killer, Mike, is because it's on tape delay. There's so many, my wife even says, and we don't watch commercials. Like, we have, you know, I even had gotten to the point when, like, watching Cavs games, like, I would start watching them in the end of the first quarter and I would just start them there, and then I wouldn't have to watch commercials until the fourth quarter or something along those lines. Back, you know, like 2 years ago, that's what I was doing when I was watching every game, like, super intently. Like, we don't watch commercials, and she would say to me, "My God, this tape delay stuff, there's so many commercials." Like, they literally would show one person do, like, their floor exercise for gymnastics, and they'd be like, "All right, we'll be back after we're from our sponsors," and it was like a 4-minute commercial. So they were, like, almost in commercials more than they were in the actual event. So I think that's to say nothing
of the fact that you already know what the result is just by looking at your phone if you want to know what's happened.
Yes, exactly.
Which, I guess that was fine in the 1980s. In 2021, like I said earlier, I don't think that really works. All right, Team USA, my takeaways from USA basketball winning the gold medal. One, there's no excuse for us ever not to win the gold medal, at least at this point in the world's history, because even when you look at these other teams that have NBA players on their roster, they have marginal NBA players. Maybe they have one or two guys that might be upper echelon starters in the NBA. But for the most part, you're talking about guys who are on NBA rosters, whereas we have a roster, even with this depleted team that didn't have all the stars, is still better than any roster that anybody can throw out. And I know we don't have practice and whatever, but still ultimately what it comes down to is talent trumps all. Durant was clearly the Team USA's best player.
He's the best player in the Mike. He's the best player in the NBA. Okay? I'm saying it. He's the best player in the NBA. If you had to pick one player right now to start your roster around, you'd pick Durant, right?
Do I want to start my roster or do I want to win one game?
I want to win one game. Win one game.
If I want to win one game, I have a hard time not picking Durant. I really do. I told you that when I was watching that Bucks series. When you're rooting against Durant, and this was the same way when he was in Golden State and we were watching and rooting for the Cavs, it just seems like the guy never misses. I know he does, but when you watch him go up for a shot, you just don't expect it to miss. I will say that there are some things that you might want him to do better. And
like not have a toe on the line?
Not have a toe on the line. I mean, there are guys who do things maybe slightly better than him. I think Giannis, you'd rather have Giannis as a defensive player, but clearly Durant's offense, as good as Giannis was, and this is crazy to say after he scored 51 in a clinching game in the NBA Finals, but clearly you'd want to have Durant as an offensive player. I know the argument still could be made for LeBron that on a one-game basis that you're going to have a hard time topping all the different things that LeBron can bring to the table, but I just think Durant's ability to score probably does trump it all. There's arguments to be made for other guys. I think you can make an argument for LeBron still. I think you can make an argument after what Giannis did in the Finals that maybe he's the guy, he's a two-time MVP. But I think if you just look at the complete package of skills, it's hard to argue against Durant. And the fact that he came back from the Achilles injury and basically, I mean, there's no discernible difference in the way that he's playing now versus how he played pre-Achilles injury. That's pretty incredible when you look at the history of guys trying to come back from an injury like that. Especially not that he's old, but he certainly wasn't 23 or 24 when he did it. So he was the Team USA's best player throughout the entire tournament. And now he's got 3 gold medals. He's the all-time leading scorer in the history of USA Olympic basketball. And just, he was the key guy. He carried them when they needed it. He scored when they needed it. He was their most consistent player. I think the other thing that I found to be interesting was just the two guys that I think benefited based on what I saw and read, it looked like the two guys that maybe had the biggest boost in their reputation. I think Holiday garnered a lot of respect, did a lot of the same things that he did for the Bucks, especially on the defensive end of the floor. I think he just became a guy that you realize
he played better in the Olympics than he did in the Finals, Mike.
He's a winning team. I mean, he's a winning player, I think is what it comes down to, because even when he's not playing as well offensively as you'd like him to, which certainly if you watched him from the perspective of a Bucks fan, there were times he left you very, very frustrated offensively. But defensively, the guy's just a menace, and yep, he brings it every night, and that's something you need on winning teams. Then I think the other guy who really improved his stock and who really – and we'll probably talk about him in a little bit as we go through the teams, although we're already 16 minutes in. So
yeah, we might have to do the Eastern Conference teams this week, Mike. And
we'll have to see. We're going to have to see how wordy we are. But anyway, I think Zach LaVine really – elevated himself and played well during the tournament, showed some things on defense, showed his ability to play within a team concept with other players of his stature. And I think it'll be interesting, and we'll talk about the Bulls a little bit, but the fact that they have for sure upgraded their talent. I don't know what level the Bulls are able to reach. I don't know if they're getting themselves to the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference, but certainly LaVine now has an opportunity to play with a pretty decent roster around him. It'll be interesting to see how he adapts his game, if he continues to develop as an individual player, and then how those individual skills translate into winning with the improved roster that the Bulls have. So we'll see.
All right. On that note, I think we're going to dive into the other topic that we have for the week. But before we do that, a word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more.
All right, we are back, and we're going to talk about NBA free agency and teams, their main gains and their main losses, and then we're going to just kind of say whether we think they're better or worse, and if we need to feel like we need to expound, we'll do that. Does that make sense, Mike?
That makes total sense.
Okay, so here we go. So, and we're going to go alphabetically by city. So we're going to start with the Atlanta Hawks. Their key additions. They got DeLon Wright. Is it DeLon? It's DeLon Wright.
DeLon Wright.
Gorgie Jang. I don't know about that one. They brought back Trae Young, John Collins, Lou Williams, Solomon Hill. Trae Young being the huge extension. And then their departures are Chris Dunn to Boston and Bruno Fernando also traded to Boston. I think, personally, I don't think this team got any better. I don't think they got any worse. I think they're about the same spot that they were. Mike?
All right, I think they're better. I think they're better because their young guys are going to have another year of experience, especially getting to the conference finals. So I think you look at Trae Young, you look at Herter, you look at John Collins. Those are all guys that are going to benefit from that playoff run and be better. Now, does that mean they're going to have a better result next year? Be hard-pressed to say that they're going to get to the NBA Finals, but I think the team overall should be better. DeLon Wright, probably a better backup point guard than Chris Dunn, especially considering that Dunn was injured a lot of the year and they didn't really use him very much. And the other thing is with them is Okongwu is injured. I think he has a shoulder. I think he had shoulder surgery, and he's going to be out like two-thirds of the season at least. So that's where Gorgie Dang, I guess, comes in as your backup center. So I think they're better. I think they're mostly better because their young guys benefit from the experience of going on that deep playoff run, and they just get better. I don't know that that equals a better record in the regular season. I don't know that that equals them reaching the same level in the playoffs that they did last year. Certainly, I don't predict that the Atlanta Hawks are going to get to the finals, but I think this team will probably be better mostly because of the experience that they gained last year rather than just looking at the roster per se.
All right. That's fair. All fair points. I was kind of just looking at my personal opinion is, yeah, I agree with you that they're definitely going to be better because of, you know, they're going to have the experience, but I don't know how much, like, quote unquote, they got better with the additions, but I understand what you're saying. So I think we're relatively in the same spot.
All right, so let's say this. They finished as they were the 5 seed, right, last year?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Better or worse? Are they going to finish better or worse than that? Let's do it that way as we go through the rest of the thing.
I think they're going to be close to being worse, actually, because the other teams around them got better, personally. Maybe I'm wrong in that. But I think there are teams that got better than them, that did better moves than them. That could potentially leapfrog them is the word I should say.
But I think they're either a push or they're maybe they fall to 6 or 7. I think they fall in the 5, 6, 7 range.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't personally think they did anything to jump up to 4. You know,
I agree.
So, all right. Next up, the Boston Celtics. They return of Horford and Cantor. They also added Josh Richardson, Chris Dunn, Bruno Fernando. They lost Tristan Thompson, Kemba Walker, and Evan Fournier.
And Schroeder. They got Schroeder.
Oh, and they got Schroeder today.
It looks like they're going to get Schroeder. I don't know if that's been confirmed, but it looks like they're going to get Schroeder.
Schroeder announced it on his Instagram page. So
okay.
I don't think he put that out unless it was true. So.
All right, so let's assume that Schroeder to Boston is – let's add that in.
Okay, so did Boston get better? I think Boston's better. I do think Boston's better. Do I think they're that much better? No, but I think they're better. I mean, Tristan was for them. Kemba Walker was injury-prone, and Evan Fournier, he had a few good games, but he literally came to Boston and immediately was COVID. And then, so he didn't have as big of an impact as he probably should have had. So that's kind of my position. I think they got slightly better, perhaps, but not like they're not gonna get like. In my opinion, they're still not a real contender as of now.
No, they are not a real contender. I think if you're looking at Boston, you have to continue to bank on the fact that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are going to continue to get better. And that's, if you're looking at what, how Boston improves themselves in the standings, it's based on those guys, not based on anything else that they did with the roster. Josh Richardson wasn't good for Dallas at all, and had that 1 year in Philly where it looked like he had kind of put it together, but never really materialized. I should say that was the, I mean, he was good in Miami, right? And then he went to Philly and was bad. And then Philly got sent him to the Mavericks, and then he was bad with the Mavericks. So who knows? I mean, I don't think Josh Richardson moves the needle at all for the Boston Celtics. If they're going to improve, I think it's because of Tatum and Brown. And I would slot Boston in somewhere in that play-in area, honestly. I think they fall again between the 7 and 10 spots in the league. I don't think they're going to move up in the East beyond that. I think they're clearly a play-in team next season.
Okay, that's fair. All right. The Brooklyn Nets, they added James Johnson, Patty Mills, Javon Carter via trade, and DeAndre Bembry. They also kept Bruce Bowen and Blake Griffin. I think the Brooklyn Nets got better, and it's purely because they got Patty Mills. I think Patty Mills is huge for them because Patty Mills can be a guy, and they got him for cheap too, in my opinion. I think Patty Mills could have gotten more than 2 years, $12 million. So I think he's a guy that can steady the ship if one of the big, you know, the two guards are out and he needs to be out there. He can do things and he can score and he can score a lot. He can play good defense. You saw it. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say you saw it because you didn't see it. But you, if you watched the Olympics, you saw what he could do. I truly, truly believe that this was a big pickup. And I think the Nets are better. I don't want to say, like, do I think they're like that much better than they were? No, but I think they're definitely better than they were. I mean, oh, I'm sorry, they didn't say who they lost. They lost Jeff Green, who really didn't play at all in the playoffs. They lost Landry Shamet, who also didn't really play at all, and they lost Spencer Dinwiddie, who was hurt. So
Jeff Green won them one game in that Milwaukee series, just like he won one game for the Cavs back in 2018.
Yeah, but then he did nothing the rest of the series.
Welcome to the Jeff Green experience.
I still think they're better, Mike. I think they're better than they were.
Look, I'm not saying that losing Jeff Green has made them considerably worse. I do think Jeff Green was a helpful player. I do think that his early season early career reputation of being up and down, I think it still continues to plague him to some degree, but no team that he's been on for the last 5 or 6 years has depended on Jeff Green to come through. He's a guy who, you bring him in, if it's going well, you keep riding him. If it isn't going well, you take him out. I think he'll be a good addition for Denver. I think he's a little bit of a loss.
Do you know how many teams he's played for, Mike?
A lot. Let's put it that way. I have no idea, but I would guess 8 to 10 at this point.
Well, he's at 10 going into this season, and now he signed with
Denver.
Denver. So that'll be number 11. He's played for, and I'm not even counting this, Seattle and Oklahoma City as two different teams. Okay, so he played Oklahoma City / Seattle. He played for Boston. He played for Memphis. He played for the Clippers, Orlando, Cleveland, Washington, Utah, Houston, Brooklyn, and now Denver.
Kudos to Jeff Green. Guy's had a long career, and despite the fact that I think many people would probably consider him maybe an underachiever, the fact that he's played this many years for this many teams and he's still in the league, and I think he signed a 2-year, $10 million deal with Denver, still an effective player at times. And losing him hurts Brooklyn. Does it hurt them in any measurable way that they can't recover from that? Absolutely not. I think bringing back Bruce Brown, bringing back Blake Griffin, getting Patty Mills, as you said, Mills is a good player. He's a guy who can fill a need for them, especially if one of those guys, Harden or Kyrie, goes down with an injury or takes a sabbatical or whatever else might happen. I think this team has to be probably the overwhelming favorite. If you look at every team in the league and you say all of them are going to be at full strength, which team is the best? I think Brooklyn is the best team. I still maintain that what I said all through last season, that there's still things that I wonder about, that I worry about with this team when it comes to all those guys fitting in and finding a role and being happy. We saw Harden have to take a backseat to Durant in that Bucks series because he was hurt. But look, if they figure it out and they each decide to sacrifice a little bit, I don't think there's any doubt that this is the best team. So all teams being healthy, Brooklyn has gotten better. And if they're healthy, I think they're the overwhelming favorite to win the title next year, which makes them better.
Yeah. All right. Next team, the Charlotte Hornets. They added Mason Plumlee and Kelly Oubre and Ish Smith. They lost Devontae Graham, Cody Zeller. I don't have anything to say about the Charlotte Hornets. They're bad.
If you're Charlotte, I think you have to hang. Well, they re-signed or they extended James Borrego's concert.
What?
They extended his concert. He's going to play the flute over on the sidelines. They extended his contract. How about that?
Yeah.
So good for them. I think he's a good coach. I don't know. I mean, the additions that they made, Plumlee, Oubre, Ish Smith, whatever.
LiAngelo's playing for their summer league team.
LiAngelo's lighting it up. LeVar's all excited. I think that being able to trade Devontae Graham for a first-round pick from the Pelicans, good move for them because it kind of clears some space in the backcourt where you already had Rozier and you've got LaMelo. Those are clearly the two guys that you want to have out on the floor most likely. Malik Monk, who used to be a part of the Charlotte Hornets and is now a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. Where was Monk? Monk was with the Hornets last year, right?
No, he was with, I feel like he was with Sacramento last year, but I don't quote me on that. I'll look. The crack research staff is doing it right now. Hold on.
We'll see where he went through. I mean, I know he started out obviously with the Hornets, but
yeah, the crack research staff is on it. So just give me 1 second.
All right. Well, we could just get.
He was with the Hornets, but this, yeah.
That's what I thought, yeah, so they didn't have him listed as a key departure. So that's not really a feather in Malik Monk's cap that he can't be even mentioned as a key departure for the Hornets. But anyway, the Hornets are all about at this point. They're all about LaMelo and LaMelo's development, and can he be the kind of guy that ends up being the best player on a good team? And I think there were certainly signs of that last year. And if LaMelo can continue to improve, get better, and be the type of player that can lead a franchise, then Charlotte can point to and say they have a bright future. But for next year, I see Charlotte. I think they fall out. I think they fall out of the plan. I think they fall down to... They were 10th last year. I think they fall below that somewhere from 11 to 15. I just don't think this team is very good. And no. I don't look at LaMelo as a guy in his second year that's going to carry them into the play-in.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I completely agree with you. All right. Next up, the team that I think we're going to spend a little bit of time on here, Chicago Bulls. They added Lonzo, Alex Caruso, DeMar DeRozan, Tony Bradley. They lost Thad Young, Al-Farouq Aminu, Tomas Satoransky, and Garrett Temple. So obviously, you know, they're going all in on guards, apparently. I mean, you signed Lonzo, you signed Caruso, you signed...
You already have Zach LaVine.
Zach LaVine.
You already have Kobe. You already have Kobe White.
Kobe White. Yeah. So you got lots of guards. Lonzo and DeMar getting the big paydays. I can't believe that DeMar DeRozan. Listen, there were reports going around that DeMar DeRozan was considering taking a pay cut to go to the Lakers. That certainly got immediately squashed when he was offered 3 years, $85 million from the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are definitely better. I think the Bulls are a playoff team. But here's the problem. I don't think this puts them in the upper echelon. I think this makes them fourth or fifth best team in the East. But they're definitely better than they were. 100%. No doubt in my mind. Fourth or fifth best team in the East.
I agree. I think they're... I don't know if they're that high. I think they can get to six. I think if things work out really well, I think they could get to five. if I just go through each of these guys one at a time, Lonzo
Ball.
So wait.
Who's the fourth team that's better than them?
So I think that you have your three teams that were better than your top three seeds in the East, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee, I think are all still better than the Chicago Bulls. I think the Heat, by adding Lowry, I think that the continued development that Hero has, a bounce back year after a little rough second year, I think Duncan Robinson continues to get better. I think the Heat are better than the Chicago Bulls. I think Atlanta is better than the Chicago Bulls. I think those two teams are probably somewhat comparable. I like Atlanta better because they've proven it now in the past season with their run to the conference finals. So I would put Atlanta ahead of them. I think Chicago, if things go right, they could maybe get to five. I think they're more likely to slot in probably at six or seven, if I had to guess.
Okay. That's fair.
So I like Lonzo Ball. I like that trade. I think that you got him for fair value. I think he's improved his three-point shooting. He's a guy who passes the ball, doesn't need to have the ball in his hands, which is key when you start looking at the type of player that Zach LaVine is. I think he's going to be perfect to play next to LaVine. So I really like, A, trading for Lonzo, and then, B, I like the contract that he signed. I think when you look at some of the other deals, even this DeMar DeRozan deal, you think 4 years for $85 million for Lonzo Ball seems like pretty good value, especially for a guy who's 23 years old. Caruso's a good signing. You get him for 4 years for $37 million. I think Caruso's a good player. He's going to contribute to winning. He's already contributed to a championship team, been out on the floor in big moments. I think he's a guy who's going to help Chicago. DeMar DeRozan, I would not have paid 3 years, $85 million. I don't know. Look, DeRozan probably makes him better because he's a good NBA player, and he does have some things that he does well. He obviously can score it really well from the mid-range. He has increased his ability to play make. I think he averaged like 7 assists last year for the Spurs. So he's been an improved player. I just don't know. I think you said it. Do these moves make the Bulls an upper echelon team in the East? No. Do they make them better? Yes. I think it's a case where Chicago, big city, the team's been down for a while. After they traded Jimmy Butler, things kind of went into the tank, and the development of Zach LaVine has been exciting, and he's been better. I think you're going to get a chance to see whether or not the Olympic experience gives him a boost like it has some other players in the past. And maybe that Zach LaVine takes that next step from being just an all-star player to a guy who can really lead a winning team. He hasn't proven that yet, but he certainly has the ability, the talent to do that. Whether or not he has the mentality and the will to do that, we'll have to wait and see. But I think this roster's better. When they traded for Vooch last year, when you look at, they're probably going to start basically three guards. So I guess DeRozan, maybe he's your small forward, right? Because you're going to start Lonzo.
Yeah.
You're going to start DeMar DeRozan.
Yep.
You're going to start LaVine. I don't see any of those guys coming off the bench. So that's your three man. Then you have Vucevic. So that's your fourth starter. And I don't know what you do for the fourth starter. Markkanen, who we didn't talk about here because I'm assuming he's going to be a key departure. Looked like on Twitter that there was some buzz that maybe he was going to go to the Mavericks, sign and trade, although they were still trying to, I think, figure that out. But I don't think they're going to bring Markkanen back based on everything that I've seen. So maybe they pick up something. I'm guessing they're not going to get a whole lot for him. Maybe they pick up a draft pick. So probably not anything that's going to help them this year. They're better. I just don't think they're certainly not. This certainly isn't a championship roster or a true contender, but they're a team that's going to be solidly, I think, in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And maybe at this point, that's enough. And you continue to hold out hope that the city of Chicago and hopefully eventually somebody will want to go and play for the Chicago Bulls. But right now they'll be average. They're going to be in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I agree with you. I do. I think they're better. They're definitely better. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen. All right. The next team, our Cleveland Cavaliers. They brought back Jerry Allen for 5 years for $100 million. Woof. That's a lot of money. But listen, there's no key departures. As of now. Obviously, we got Mobley. And we also got Ricky Rubio. I would make an argument that Ricky Rubio is a key addition. I think Taurean Prince is Taurean Prince would be a key departure, but that's just my opinion. I know we had a log jam at that position and whatever. I mean, are the Cavs better, Mike, than they were? I think they are better because they lost Delly and they got Ricky Rubio. Do I think that this moves the needle for the Cleveland Cavaliers in any way, shape, or form? I don't think so. I think they're going to win a few more games than they should have won. Justin and I got into an argument about he thinks that Ricky Rubio wins them 4 or 5 more games. I said, I don't know if I'm ready to jump on that bandwagon yet, Justin. But I think they're better. I think they're definitely better. How much better, that remains to be seen.
I think Rubio helps. I think having a guy who is primarily pass first is going to make guys better. I think he's going to make Evan Mobley better. I think he's going to make Mobley's transition to the pros better because Rubio, the one thing he can do is pass the ball. And he's a guy who gets teammates the ball where they want it, where they need it. He's really a professional point guard. He's a guy whose shooting has held him back at the highest level. But I think with this team, it makes sense. If you look at a 3-guard rotation of Rubio, Sexton, and Garland, if those are the 3 guys that are going to play the bulkier minutes, I think you can put some good, nice combinations out there that the backcourt is going to be, they'll be okay. And I think Garland and Sexton are going to continue to get better. What their ceiling is together, we've questioned it many times on the pod, but individually, I think each of those guys is going to continue to get better. And I expect them to continue to progress. What that means in terms of wins, I don't know, but Rubio's a nice addition. The Jared Allen contract, I don't love it, but I also didn't really want to see the Cavs just totally let him go. I don't know what his market was in restricted free agency, who was going to offer him what, but in all honesty, I'm okay with it. If you're the Cavs, you got to spend money somewhere. You're not getting any free agents anyway. That's a contract that maybe at some point you can put it into a trade, and you got to have money to put into a trade in order to get somebody back. So I'm okay with that. For the Cavs, it's all about Mobley, right? Is he going to turn out to be the best player in this draft? Is he going to turn out to be a bust? Is he going to be the 3rd best player? Is he going to be the 10th best player? Who knows? But if Mobley ends up being a great player, then you can start to do some other things and start to slot some people around him and figure it out. And who knows? Mobley has a lot of skill. If you watch his highlights and you see some of the things that he's capable of doing, putting the ball on the floor, blocking shots defensively, moving his feet, guarding perimeter players as a center, as a guy who's 7 feet tall. You look at a guy like Giannis, you look at what Durant can do, and I'm not comparing him in any way, shape, or form to two of the best players in the NBA. But,
well, why not? That's what they were doing on draft night.
A guy who has that kind of size and that kind of movement, certainly if you project him out and you say, well, what's his ceiling? You hope that, hey, if he could get to 90%, if he could get to 80% of those guys, then you have a pretty good player. And so who knows? Who knows? But when you take that swing in the top 5, you better cross your fingers and hope you get it right. And if the Cavs did, then the future for this team looks a lot brighter. If he turns out to not be a guy that was worthy of the 3rd pick and there's guys behind him that end up being better, then this team is stuck because I think they're going to win a few more games this year. I actually think they're going to probably be better this year. So I say this team's improved, but again, I look at it, they're improved because their individual players are going to probably get better. I think Rubio does make a difference. I don't know if he wins them 4 or 5 games, but I think he makes them better. And crossing my fingers that Mobley's good. And if Mobley's good, that helps you a little bit too. Because I think if Mobley's good, he's going to be good on both ends of the floor. Like, I don't think he's going to be your typical rookie where he's going to score 20 on one end and give up 25 on the other end. I think if he has a good season, I think he's going to be pretty good offensively. And I think he has the potential to be very good on defense.
Yep. All right. Next up, we have the Dallas Mavericks. They added Reggie Bullock and Sterling Brown. They brought back Tim Hardaway Jr. and Boban. And they lost Melly. which I don't necessarily know that Melly was doing anything for them anyway, so I don't know how much of a key departure that is. But anyways, Dallas Mavericks. Oh, and they also got Luka to sign the rookie Supermax thing. So
that's a win.
That's a win for sure. So I think that's a win. I think Dallas. Do I think Dallas got a little bit better? I think they got a little bit better. Do I think that they're that much better? I don't think they're that much better. I mean, but you do have Luka, so you never know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think that they got that much better to help them, you know, contend. But they potentially. I mean, is Reggie Bullock gonna do what he did for parts of the time this season? I don't know. So, what do you think, Mike?
I think Dallas slots in right about where they were last year. So they finished fifth in the West last year. I think they're probably going to finish somewhere in there. There's a lot of teams in the West that, who knows? I think that the top, again, seven or eight probably could go a lot of different directions. I expect those teams to be kind of bunched up and fairly close together. And a lot of it's going to depend upon injuries and what happens in that area. But I expect Dallas to be somewhere in that 4, 5, 6 range. Luka, look, he's been first team all NBA the last 2 years as whatever, a 20 and 21 year old. So I wouldn't expect anything different from him going into this year. You'd only expect him to continue to get better and add things to his game. I think his Olympic experience probably is a huge benefit. Again, just being able to carry that Slovenian team as far as he did. I expect Luka to have just a phenomenal, unbelievable season. And if he does, they have enough around them on the roster to finish where they were this year. And their long-term key is what happens with Porzingis. Is Porzingis what he was last season, where he's kind of a shell of what we thought he could be? Does he ever rebound athletically to the point where he can be more effective on the defensive end of the floor and he can move and attack the rim the way he did in his early years in New York? Or is that guy gone because of the leg injuries? And if he's gone, that's going to be rough for Dallas. Cause if that guy is gone, then not only does he not play that role for your team, but it's also going to be really hard to trade him for anything meaningful that you can get back that's going to have an impact. So I think for Dallas, you have to look at it and say they can be good, but they can only reach their ceiling if you get the best version, or at least something close to the best version of Porzingis.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as with always with Porzingis, you know, it's, can he stay healthy? I mean, he's got the skill set, but is he going to stay healthy enough to make an impact on your team for a long enough period of time? And I don't know that. I don't know the answer. It's hard when you're a 7-footer, Mike. It's like, I think back to Zydrunas in his early years. He couldn't recover from that ankle injury. I mean, it's not the same thing because it's a knee thing, but, you know, I think it's pretty similar to the same thing. Would you?
You probably have to bet. You'd probably have to bet no. I mean, I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, you can't bank on it. You just can't. Next up, free agency tracker, Denver Nuggets. Key additions, Jeff Green. They brought back J. Michael Green, Will Barton, Austin Rivers. No key departures. The thing is this. Denver's big problem is, how long is Jamal Murray going to be out? And what's he going to look like when he comes back? I mean, is he going to be back? Mike, have you seen anything? Do they think he's going to be back for the season at any point?
I don't think they have any idea. I mean, I think you look at when he tore his ACL last year. So it was with 15 games to go, 10, 15 games to go in the regular season. So you're talking about, it was probably end of April, right? Beginning of May, maybe when he did it.
I'll see if I can.
So you think about if it's a year, if you're going to wait a year, then he's coming back in the playoffs. Theoretically, if he could get back in 9 months and have some regular season basketball underneath him, then maybe. But it seems unlikely that, A, if you're Denver, you're going to rush him back, and B, that if he does come back, he's going to be anywhere near the guy that they're going to need him to be in order to make a run to the
April
NBA
12th,
title.
April 12th was the injury, Mike. April 12th.
So that's probably coincides with just about the end of the regular season this year, if it takes him a year to come back from it. So even optimistically, you say he's back a month before that, 2 months before that. I don't know. That seems pretty ambitious to bring a guy back and then expect that he's going to be your 1B or maybe your 1A as a playoff player for the Nuggets come next spring. I don't see that, but I guess it's possible, but history would tell you that it's going to take not this season, where maybe he's back and he's playing, but I don't think he's going to be himself until the 22-23 season. So Denver's chances, I would say, you have to look at where they finish in the regular season, say they're going to finish worse. Although maybe Michael Porter Jr. takes that next step and he becomes sort of that same role that Jamal Murray was in. I mean, he has a ways to go to get there. I don't think he's ever going to be as good as Jamal Murray, what Murray's done in the playoffs the previous two seasons before this one was pretty incredible. It would take quite a bit of development from Michael Porter Jr. in order to get him to that level. But I would expect Denver to be worse than what they are simply because of the lack of Jamal Murray for the entire regular season.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, I think Denver's worse, but not because they didn't try to make their team better. I mean, I guess they really only added Jeff Green. They're worse because they're not going to have Jamal Murray, and that's the bottom line.
Absolutely.
All right, next up, we have the Detroit Pistons. They got Cade Cunningham, obviously. They added Kelly Olynyk, Trey Lyles. They brought back Corey Joseph and Saban Lee. I didn't even know who that guy is when I saw that.
Saban Lee.
He's a key bright. He brought him back, apparently, is key. And their key departure is Mason Plumlee. Detroit's still a project. You know, it'll be interesting to see how Cade Cunningham plays. It'll be interesting to see how they all play together. But Detroit's still a project. Are they better? I guess so. I mean, you've got Cade Cunningham. You've got to be better. How much better are they going to be? I'm not willing to say. I think they're going to be a tick better, but I don't think they're not going to be like world beaters or anything here.
I agree. They're still at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. They're in one of the last, I'd say, maybe they can get up to the fourth worst team, something like that. Yeah. But Cade Cunningham should be good. Killian Hayes, back from injury, should hopefully have a better second year than he had as a first-year player. So those two guys, if they continue to develop and are on the trajectory that people thought of each of them prior to their draft, then those are two pretty good guys to build around. Plus, they have some of the guys they picked up in last year's draft. You have Sadiq Bey, who's proven to be a really good NBA player. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a cornerstone. Of course, they have Jeremy Grant. So I think that, look, the team will be better if Cade Cunningham's especially as good as people said he was going to be. But are they good enough to leap up into the play-in? No, I still think they slot below the play-in near the bottom of the Eastern Conference.
All right, Golden State. Bring back Andre Iguodala. Otto Porter signs with him. Bjelica?
Come on, man. You don't know how to say that one?
Bjelica?
Nemanja Bjelica.
Oh, Bjelica.
Nemanja Bjelica.
But I think the key addition in my mind is not any of these guys. Can I say Klay Thompson's a key addition? He's back healthy. I know he's not free agency, but Klay Thompson. Key departure, Eric Paschal, Kent Bazemore, Kelly Oubre. I mean, Oubre had like two good games for them all year. That kind of two really good games for them. So I don't know, like, whatever. Golden State's better, 100%. Bringing back Andre Iguodala, it's like they got the band back together. Otto Porter is a sneaky good pickup for them. Bjelica, I mean, I can't really tell you much about that guy. He helps.
He helps them.
I think Golden State's better, and I think Golden State, Mike, if Klay Thompson comes back and is healthy and looks good, I think Golden State's a top three team in the West. I truly believe that.
Let me ask you this though: what are the odds that Klay Thompson is Klay Thompson?
I mean, I would say low. I would say 50%, 40%. It's going to take him some time. He's going to have to dust off the wheels. But I'm telling you, if he comes back, Mike, even if he's 80% of what he was.
Oh, he makes him better. There's no question. I think the one thing that he has going for him is that his game and his ability to shoot wasn't necessarily, at least on the offensive end of the floor, his athleticism wasn't the key to him being a good offensive player. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I think where those injuries are going to affect him more is on the defensive end of the floor, because he was always a guy that they could put on the other team's better, one of the other team's better perimeter players. And I'm not sure that those injuries and how he's going to be diminished is going to allow him to be the same type of player he was on that end of the floor. I think offensively he'll probably be fine. And yet at the same time, I would be deathly afraid if I was a Warriors fan that he's had two of the worst injuries, obviously, that any athlete can have. And to me, it seems like the odds of him being able to stay healthy after suffering those two injuries, I'd have a hard time banking on that. But if he can, I do think that this team suddenly becomes pretty interesting. They've got a couple young guys with Wiseman, and they drafted Kuminga, and who was their second pick in the first round? Now then, Moses Moody, is that who they took?
Yeah, Moses Moody, and he looks good in the first. I haven't watched much summer league, but he looked pretty good in the first summer league game.
And Kuminga is a great athlete. I've seen a couple highlights of him taking the ball to the rack and dunking, and you can look at it both ways. That those guys, that maybe things are tough on them because Golden State system is maybe a little complicated, and maybe because they're built to win now that those guys aren't going to get any minutes. And you look at kind of what happened with Wiseman last year. But on the other hand, you could theoretically say that they're in a stable system with good teammates and guys that can help nurture them and bring them along. But so it's hard to thread that needle of being a championship contender and also building these young guys, which is why a lot of people expected Golden State to trade those picks. And who knows, maybe there's still something in the works at some point that if somebody becomes available here or somebody becomes available near the trade deadline, that maybe they do ship out a Kuminga and Wiseman package to bring back somebody that can help them more immediately. So I think this team has a lot of questions. I think their ceiling is championship contender, but I'm not 100% convinced that you're getting 80% of the old Klay Thompson. I think that's asking a lot. I really think it is. So I would expect this team to be better, to finish higher in the standings than they did last year, but I'm not convinced that they're a true title contender because I just don't know how healthy they're going to be.
I mean, all fair points, Mike. All fair points. I just feel like they can do it, and I'm rooting for it because I want Golden to enjoy Golden State basketball, and that's what I'm.
And I think Otto Porter. You made a good point. I didn't say anything about him, but I think Otto Porter could be like the Batum of this season, where people thought Batum was completely finished in Charlotte, and I think people have thought that Otto Porter's been completely finished. But you put him on Golden State and you ask him to do very certain specific things in a limited role.
He could end up being
a good addition to their team. So,
all right, the next team, the Houston Rockets. When your key addition is Daniel Theis, that's not a good sign. Daniel Theis, they brought back David Nwaba, and they lost Kelly Olynyk. Oof, Houston Rockets, you got rid of one guy that's not the great, and you signed a former Celtic for another former Celtic. I don't think Houston's also at the bottom of the barrel. They're not going to be that much better. They got Jalen Green. They're just not going to be that good of a basketball team. Your thoughts, Mike?
I mean, this season's all about Jalen Green and possibly Christian Wood. I mean, those are the two guys that if you're Houston, that's who you're building around. That's who you're looking at. That's who you're watching. You're trying to see what their development is. You want to try to put a good structure around those two guys so that as they mature into the types of players that they can be. And I know Christian Wood is probably 25 and Jalen Green's 19. So they're not necessarily that closely tied, but those are the two guys that probably have the most potential to still be on the Houston Rockets when the Houston Rockets become a playoff team again. So for me, this season's all about Jalen Green. I expect Houston to finish at or near the bottom of the Western Conference again, 14 or 15, barring something completely unforeseen.
Yeah. All right. Oh, that was a quick one. All right. Next up, the Clippers. Their key addition is Justice Winslow. He brought back Kawhi, Nick Batum, Reggie Jackson, and they lost no one. But really, Kawhi's injured. So, listen, the Clippers are worse. The Kawhi's not going to be back. There's zero chance. He waited until, like, the middle of May or the middle of July to have the surgery. Like, Kawhi being Kawhi, I don't know. I don't even think there's any chance he's playing at all next year. So the Clippers are worse. And, you know, in 2 years from now, who knows what it's going to look like, but they're definitely worse next year. I don't think their team got that much better at all. You know, Justice Winslow, what is he? He doesn't move the needle. He barely saw playing time last year at points. So I don't think the Clippers are
Justice
worse.
Justice Winslow is a nothing signing. I guess it's a flyer that theoretically he has talent. I guess theoretical, let's call him theoretical Justice Winslow. Theoretical Justice Winslow could help you, but yeah. The real Justice Winslow I don't think is of any value. And Kawhi Leonard, I mean, is he going to play? I would guess not. I have no idea, but is a partial ACL tear easier to repair than a full ACL tear? It doesn't seem like it based on everything that we've read about Kawhi's timetable for returning, right?
Right. I haven't seen it. I basically said that he's seen that he's going to be out for maybe being back for the playoffs if there might be a small chance.
And it doesn't seem like he's a guy who is going to fight his way back early to play through injury based on his track record over the last couple of years of load management. So I think the Clippers are playing this season without Kawhi Leonard, which means that they're going to be worse as a team without question. You skipped a team.
Who did I skip?
You must have clicked really fast. You skipped the Indiana Pacers.
Oh my gosh.
So we have to work backwards in our alphabetical order.
How did I do that? Oh, I did miss the Indiana Pacers.
I think you did a fast click. I think you did a fast double click.
It's like when you start recording sometimes.
Exactly. Sometimes that happens.
Okay, the Indiana Pacers, the key addition is Torrey Craig. They brought back TJ McConnell. They lost Doug McDermott. I think they're worse. I mean, I think Doug McDermott. Well, okay. So defensively, you might be a little bit better. Offensively, you're worse if you're swapping Torrey Craig for Doug McDermott, in my opinion. So does this do anything for the Indiana Pacers? The answer is no. This offseason, their needle hasn't moved, and I don't think it's really moved either way, to be honest with you. I think they're stuck in neutral, in my opinion.
I think Indiana's better.
Oh.
Not because of what you see on this site that we're both looking at in terms of additions and bringing back, but last year they were missing TJ Warren, who didn't play the majority of the season. He's a good player. And they also were missing Caris LeVert for most of the season. Now, can you count on Caris LeVert to play a whole season and not get hurt? I don't think so. But if we're just going on their potential without being injured, I think those two guys make them better. Brogdon was hurt at various points during the season last year, and you bring him back healthy. The guy they got in the draft, Chris Duarte, supposed to be good. He was a guy that was rumored for some of the better teams because people liked him because they thought he was ready to play and contribute. So I think Indiana's better. Now, you look at where they finished last year. They're in the play-in. They finished number 9. Are they better than that? Maybe they sneak up to 7 or 8. I don't see them being in the top 6, but I could see them moving up to the 7 or 8 slot. Ahead of, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I could see them moving up. I think they're better if they're healthy.
Okay. Fair points. All right, Mike. We've decided, by the way, that we're going to do half the NBA since we're being way more long-winded than we anticipated us being, which big shocker.
We should know by this point.
So I think this next team is the perfect team for us to stop on. We'll do this team and then we'll be done, Mike, because this might be a long conversation.
I agree. Okay. Let's see. We're at 1 hour and 3 minutes. So we're gonna cap it an hour and 15. Okay. Hour and fifteen is our goal. We're gonna
an
hour and 15.
Let's see how this goes. The Los Angeles Lakers, as the article says, get comfortable. This is gonna take a while. Key additions: Russell Westbrook, Kendrick Nunn, Dwight Howard, Malik Monk, Trevor Ariza, Kent Bazemore, Carmelo Anthony, Wayne Ellington. Bringing back Talen Horton-Tucker. They traded Kuzma, Caldwell Pope, Montrezl Harrell, Alex Caruso, Andre Drummond, Markieff Morris are all gone from the team. Whew. Let's just go through it.
Let's leave Russell Westbrook for last. So even though he's listed first as key additions.
Okay.
Let's go through each of these other guys and just give, based on who the guy is, based on the contract that he was given, those two factors, good move, bad move, move, let's rate it that way. So go through each one of those guys, and we can each give a rating, and if you want to expound anymore.
Kendrick Nunn, 2 years, $10 million. He did nothing for the Miami Heat the last two seasons. He had like one or two really good games. I don't know how he got $10 million. Congrats, Kendrick Nunn. Are they taking a flyer on him, perhaps? Is he going to see a lot of minutes? I don't know. I mean, I think some of these guys that we're going to talk about in a minute that got minimum deals are going to see more minutes than he is. But, yeah, I don't know.
You're a thumbs down on Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah, I'm a thumbs down on Kendrick Nunn.
All right, I'm going to go the other way. I think it's a thumbs up. I think Kendrick Nunn is a young guy. I think... Did he occasionally struggle in the Heat's playoff run? Yes. He got replaced. He started that whole entire season, the bubble season, and then got replaced by Dragic when it came time for the playoffs. But I think a lot of what you have to do with the Lakers, it's almost like there's two different teams. Part of it is, what can this team be in the regular season to sort of carry an aging LeBron through the regular season to the playoffs? And then who's going to be the seven or eight guys that they trust in the playoffs? I'm not 100% sure Kendrick Nunn is going to be in their seven or eight man rotation come playoff time. But I do think over the course of the regular season that because he's young and because he does have some skill and because he was available at, I think, 2 years, $10 million for Kendrick Nunn is a pretty good deal. I think he's going to help them in the regular season. So I give this signing a thumbs up.
Okay. Dwight Howard, minimum. Sure, why not? For a minimum?
That's a thumbs up.
Thumbs up. That's a thumbs up move, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially since he was with the Lakers during their championship year, it's not like he has to fit in back with LeBron and AD and whatever, and they got to get to know him, whatever. That's already done, so that's a thumbs up.
Malik Monk, 1 year minimum. I think that's a thumbs up.
That's a thumbs up.
Okay, Trevor Ariza, 1 year minimum. That's a thumbs up. You play him for 12 minutes. He's still a plus defender. He's still a plus defender statistically. Thumbs up. If you play him and put him in a role, it's a thumbs up move in my opinion. Once again, minimum contract.
That's an eh. Completely down on it, but I don't. He's too old. I don't think Trevor Ariza contributes a whole lot. I think he ends up playing like the Jared Dudley role. He ends up just being a guy on the bench that. He's the cagey veteran that talks to people when they come off the floor. I don't see him contributing. He's the Dante Jones. Yeah, I don't see him contributing. I don't see him contributing a whole lot regular season or playoffs, to be honest with you.
Okay. Kent Bazemore.
That's an eh. I'm okay with it. I don't think Bazemore does anything great. I don't think he hurts you. I think he could potentially give you something, but I don't look for him to be a huge contributor.
Melo. I'm thumbs up in Thumbs up in it over here.
That's a shock.
Thumbs up in it over here.
Listen, that's a shock.
He can go off in a game. He can score if you need him to score. What did he average last year? He had to have averaged 13 points a game, 14 points a game, 15 points a game. And now he's going to be playing with a better team. How many points a game did Carmelo average? I'm looking right now. He averaged 13 points a game last year. Okay. I think it's a thumbs up, Mike.
All right, here's how I look at this. It's a minimum.
It's a minimum.
It's a minimum. It's a thumbs up only because I wouldn't be completely frightened to have Carmelo out on the floor in an NBA Finals game. I think you could put Carmelo out there, and I think he could acquit himself well in the role that he's going to be asked to play for this Lakers team. So it's a thumbs up. Plus, LeBron and Carmelo finally get the opportunity to be on the same team together. So kudos to them. Although he could also be released after 15 games like Dwayne Wade and the Cavs. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. And then the last one, Wayne Ellington, 1 year minimum. Listen, my big thing is all these guys are on minimum contracts. So like, that's why I kind of like, you know, we could talk about thumbs up, thumbs down. Like at least all these guys have been at some point a contributor in some way, shape, or form, right?
I agree. Ellington's a thumbs up. I agree.
Ellington's a thumbs up. He can stand in the corner and hit threes. Like, that's all you need him to do. I mean, he's never averaged more than 11 or 12 points per game, but you don't really need him to do more. You don't need him to score that much. You just need him to be able to stand in the corner and shoot threes.
Here's what you need. So you have Nunn, Monk, Ariza, Bazemore, Carmelo, and Wayne Ellington. You need three out of those six guys
to hit
to prove to be functional. If three of them are non-functional and three of them prove to be guys that can be part of your rotation, then I think you got to look at that as a win if you're the Lakers.
Yep, I agree. All right. Is it time to go up, back up? Is it time to go back up and talk Russ, Mike?
Talen Horton Tucker, good re-signing. Especially at the price they got him back. Young player. They already had him in the fold. They kind of know what his value is, what they think he can develop into. So sure, let's talk departures. Does them losing any of the guys that they lost? I think KCP hurts their, you know, that's a loss, and I think Caruso's a loss. Markieff Morris.
You don't think Drummond's a loss?
Drummond's not a loss. Montrezl Harrell's not a loss. Kuzma's gotten better, but I don't think there was a role for him just based positionally with the Lakers. They were never going to be able to maximize. Like, I think he'll be good for Washington.
Yep.
But I don't think he was ever going to reach what his potential was as a Laker. So to me, it's KCP and Caruso is the two guys that you lost. And what you're losing with those guys is the defensive end of the floor. Nobody that's on those minimum contracts that we talked about, none of those guys are replacing the defense that Caldwell Pope and Caruso brought to the table. So that's where I think offensively it's probably going to be a wash, because I do think that a couple of those guys are going to perform well offensively, but defensively, none of them are capable of doing what KCP and Caruso did. So that's where the Lakers are going to struggle.
And they also, I guess another key departure would be Schroeder. But okay, Russell Westbrook. Mike, does this work? I don't think it works. I don't think it works. Listen, I want it to work. But I can't wait. Listen, Mike, I was going to use this line with Justin and I didn't use it. I can't wait for the first game that LeBron is pulling out whatever is left of his receding hairline because Russell Westbrook does some inexplicable thing in the last minute and a half of the game. I can't wait to see it. I'm excited for that. It's going to be a beautiful, intriguing train wreck at times, I think.
I'm excited for the first time each one of them is staring at the other, giving them a stink eye and a stare down. That's what I'm waiting for. I want to have like the shot of them 10 feet away from each other, each one of them staring at the other one with the stink eye that they often give to their teammates. Look, I think the big question becomes, there's two questions with this team. Well, there's three. Each of their big three has a question. So clearly we know what the question is with LeBron.
Father Time.
Right? Right. Does age begin to creep up on him, continue to creep up on him, whatever you want to say? Does his age have an effect where he can't be the LeBron that we've all known him to be throughout his career? Even last season before he gets hurt, he's playing at an MVP level. He's in the MVP conversation. If they have that guy and that guy stays healthy, then you've answered the LeBron question resoundingly. And you know he's one of the best five players in the league at worst. Anthony Davis?
Can he stay healthy?
Can he stay healthy? And is he, when LeBron is down or when LeBron is out, he clearly becomes the second fiddle to Russ in terms of his alpha dogginess. I mean, he's clearly the third in line in this pecking order when it comes to who's the alpha male on the team. And ideally, you'd like to have him probably, he should probably be the best player on this team at this point. Like, the Lakers would be at their best if Anthony Davis was the best player in his prime at age, whatever, 28 versus a 37-year-old LeBron and a 32 or 33-year-old Russell Westbrook. This team would be best if Anthony Davis was their best player and was their de facto leader on the floor. It's not going to happen. So it comes down to, can he stay healthy? And if he stays healthy, we know how good he is. He's a top five talent in the league. He's a top 10 player in terms of performance. He may even be higher than that. And then Russell Westbrook, I think the big question with him is, can LeBron, can the winning environment that the Lakers are hoping to create, can you get Russell Westbrook to play better off the ball, be more engaged off the ball offensively? Can you get him to lock in more defensively and not be such a freelancer like he's been basically throughout his entire career? It seems highly unlikely that he's going to start to do all the little basketball things that people have nitpicked him out about throughout his career. It seems unlikely that at age 32 or 33 that he's going to suddenly change and start doing all the little things that people have wanted him to do his whole career. And if he doesn't, then this fit of all three of those guys on the floor becomes pretty clunky, because nobody's going to guard Russ out on the three-point line. They want him to shoot. And we know that Russ in his career has wanted to shoot the ball. He wants to shoot, despite the fact that he's not a very good shooter. So you said you don't think it's going to work. I honestly don't think it's going to work either, because I think all three of the things that we said have to happen for this team to reach its potential, I don't think all three of those things are going to happen. Could two of them happen? Could one of them happen? Sure. But for all three of those things, for LeBron to stay healthy and be at his best, for AD to stay healthy and be at his best, and for Westbrook to embrace playing a slightly different way, there's nothing in his past that indicates that that's going to happen. I don't see all three of those things happening, and therefore I don't think the Lakers are going to, I don't think they're going to reach the maximum potential of what this team can be, because I don't see all three of those things happening.
Yep. I agree. I just think that it's going to be fun, interesting to watch how it all transpires. But I will say this much. If I'm LeBron and you know how injury prone AD is, there's one thing that will be said for Russell Westbrook. He goes out and he'll play if he's hurt. Like, really, has he had an injury other than his ACL injury, Mike? He hasn't, right?
He's been nicked up a little bit the last few years, and he had a couple knee surgeries over the course of time, just not major like blowout.
He'll go out there and play through stuff. Like, he will do it.
No one's questioning Russell Westbrook's toughness. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So I think that's huge for LeBron. And listen, there's no way that they do this trade if LeBron's not signing off on it, right?
You wouldn't think so.
I mean, he's basically the GM anyways, according to some people. So in the grand scheme of things, do I think the Lakers are better? I think the Lakers are probably better, Mike.
But they're probably certainly going to finish higher than seventh, I would think.
Yeah, it's just barring injury. It's just going to be getting all the pieces to fit right and getting them used to each other. There's going to be some. There's going to be some learning process curves going on for sure.
Do you think they are? Do you think they or the Nets are a bigger favorite in their respective conference?
Oh, the Nets.
I agree.
Because I think the West is tougher than the East still.
I agree. I agree.
I mean, you got to go through Luka. You got to go through Phoenix. You got to go through Denver, even without Jamal Murray.
And your number one seed in Utah Jazz.
You got, yeah. So, yeah, it's still easier in the East, in my opinion.
I agree.
I think it's closer than it was, especially with Kawhi being out and Jamal Murray being out. I think you could maybe start to make some arguments that really it's top, both conferences are top heavy, and then it's not. So like maybe three or four teams in each conference, and then you're not as tough. But I think the bottom of the East is worse than the bottom of the West still, in my opinion.
It's close, though, because Houston's going to be really bad. Oklahoma City, I think, is going to be bad again. Minnesota, you can't convince me they're going to be very good. And Sacramento,
who knows? Yeah, okay. Well, I understand. I understand. But
who knows?
Yeah. All right, Mike.
Let's wrap it up there.
We've wrapped it up there. So next week, we will start with the Memphis Grizzlies, and we will go through the rest of the teams, and we will start the episode by talking about any major news that happens. Although I have to imagine, there's not going to be too much major news, Mike, but we'll see. And then we'll go through the rest of the team, starting with Memphis, that we didn't get to in this episode.
Sounds like a plan. We appreciate everyone joining us tonight on the Hoopheads Pod. I am glad to be back in the saddle again and excited for what we have coming up soon on the podcast. So thanks to everyone for checking us out tonight. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Hoopheads Pod, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.